While I've been lucky enough to speak at some really wonderful conferences, there's also a whole set of places that I would call the big leagues. Places like TED, where you have a world-famous audience, and whoever is lucky enough to get up on that stage is seen by literally millions. There's also big leagues in terms of shows that I really wish I had been part of. And if my skills could have gotten me on those stages, I would have been just in paradise. There's South by Southwest keynotes where you have thousands of people in the audience. And there's one show that I worked with literally for months putting together a speech, and it never happened. Here's why. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Peter Healy, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. The show that I never got a chance to be on stage for, the big leagues I would have loved to have been a part of, was called Pop-Up Magazine. It's a live show with absolutely no recording. That means whatever you saw on stage that night was going to never be seen again. Truly old school. Now, the thinking behind it was interesting. Besides the uniqueness of the experience and ensuring that people would buy tickets knowing they weren't going to see it on YouTube a few weeks later, it was also a way for them to cover subjects and events without having the faces of people or information that was personal end up on the internet at large. That meant that you could tell extremely personal stories that otherwise would have ramifications for the people being discussed, and you'd know that you were sharing it, if not among friends, among a controlled space. I had the pleasure of going to a pop-up magazine show once, and it was really inspiring. Folks did musical numbers. They talked about meeting the 9/11 hijackers. What I'm saying is, it's the real deal. It's a great, great show. And naturally, as somebody who loves stories and loves finding something that is breathtakingly interesting, I wanted to get on stage myself. I ended up being contacted by Pop-Up Magazine to ask if I had any stories, and there was one story that I had been carrying around for years that I thought was perfect for them. I'd mentioned it once or twice at a DEF CON speech and at another hacker convention, but I wanted all the details, and I wanted to craft it to a fine, fine shine for an audience like this. You see, often my work is pretty extemporaneous, me having a very rough outline of what I want to do, and then going back and saying it to the audience live, and sometimes I'm hearing what I'm saying at the same time as the audience. It's literally coming out freely from me. But the idea of a scripted, multimedia, professional performance, well, I'd love to do that, if I can. I came out swinging with my favorite story, and they said, yes, this is something we could really work with. Here's the story. I became pretty well known, and I'm still pretty well known for taking in dead media, anything like CD-ROMs, floppy disks, or cassette tapes that have been forgotten or thrown to the wayside. And this reputation meant I would get some amazing emails. But there was one email that I got that was particularly normal initially, until I found out what was going on. I was contacted by a person who said that they were working with a guy named Majer, and that he had a whole pile of shareware CDs, and would I accept them and have them mailed to me so that I could image them and put them up? And I said, oh, absolutely. I always try to say, oh, absolutely. So they sent me a couple stacks of shareware CDs that I hadn't seen before, and I thought, this is perfect. over the next few months, they would send me a few more and say that Megere found another pile, and they asked me, you know, would I take these as well? And it was always yes, always yes. Now, somewhere in there, the person who was talking to me said something a little odd. He used a very strange phrase, and I have long forgotten what that phrase was, but I said, what do you mean by that? And he apologized to me and said, oh, I'm sorry. I speak in Dutch Yiddish. That's my first language, and English is my second. And I said, Dutch Yiddish, I have never heard of. What do you mean? And he said, oh, well, you have to understand, I'm Amish. Now, the Amish are not renowned for their computer skills or for the fact that they would have shareware CDs. So naturally, while I continued making arrangements with them, I just kind of commented on this. And very slowly, this person started to tell me what was going on. There was a guy named Megere, but he wasn't named Megere. Megere was an honorific given to him by this Amish community. This Amish community had a group of elders, older members of the community, who would guide them and help the community make decisions. This meant, in many cases, having to deal with the English, the outsiders, the other parts of the community that were not Amish, people you would buy things from, make business with, have laws passed, and basically a foreign country as far as the Amish were concerned. Since the Amish reject most modern technology and most trappings of the modern era until they have complete and total understanding of what its ramifications are, this means that they get perceived as backwards or ignorant, but it's nothing like that. The Board of Elders observes the outside world. This person, who I'm calling Megere, had a different name, and he had shown from his youth an incredible amount of skills. He was unquestionably a genius with a true photographic memory and skills in picking up information and knowledge and trades like nobody they had seen. And they offered and gave him a very interesting task. The offer was that he would go out into what we would call the real world, the outside world, that he would get a job out there and he would engage himself in the information and innovations and technology of the modern world. He would literally reject most of the aspects of the Amish life. In return, he would be able to advise the elders on issues that would come up over the years. In other words, he was an Amish spy put into the foreign world, the world of the English, to provide information. And along the way, among the things he had done in the 80s and 90s was run a bulletin board system, took callers, bought shareware CDs, and observed everything, writing down reports and then giving them to the elders over the years. So imagine these elders having their meetings a few times a year, and a fellow comes in who looks completely modern and then speaks to them about what's going on. That was this person. Obviously, this was not something I was supposed to know about or that anybody was really supposed to know about. And what had happened is that over the years, Megere's eyes had started to fail. He had ocular degeneration, and he was going blind. So in recognition of the work he had done all his life for this Amish community, he had been given the honorific of Megere and had been thought of, as this person explained to me, as somebody who had walked through the fires of hell for the purpose of giving his community protection and insight from the evils of the outside world. They had set him up with a place to live and had given him a number of staff, including the person I was talking to. And Megere had taken in all of the equipment all of the information, books, and other parts of his outside life, and in the barn he had set up a set of shelves with numbers underneath them, and he was able to, after he was blind and using his photographic memory, be able to tell his assistants which shelf to go to. So he was telling them which shelf in the barn had the shareware CDs that he was remembering, and those were being mailed to me. This story, to me, is fascinating. The idea that there were Amish who had saved computer history and were providing them for me so many years later. I talked a little bit with this assistant, this Dutch Yiddish speaking Amish assistant, and he told me a little bit about the politics, and there were different factions fighting over whether or not the assistant could be part of this group or that group, and that he might eventually have to stop talking to me just as a matter of the whole process. So he was rushing to get me these shareware CDs. Eventually, the mail stopped. But I thought this was one of the most precious stories I'd ever heard. All of the shareware CDs are on the Internet Archive. They're on cd.textfiles.com, which is my CD-ROM collection that I was working on at textfiles.com before the much bigger location became available. And here it was a good number of years later, easily something like 8 or 9 years later, and I was bringing this story up to Pop-Up Magazine. They were fascinated at the idea of what this was. The idea that you could have Amish saving computer history just seemed perfect. And here's why it never happened. So we had a number of barriers to making this all happen. Naturally, the person who was organizing it wanted to verify all of the information, everything we could from the outside, the location of the place, the people who were involved, if it was possible to find out stuff about Majere or find information about this group, it would be nice to have, being able to verify what exactly I got and when. So we started to make plans over how would we do this? How exactly would we put together all these things? To be frank, gaps started to appear. We definitely found the location. We definitely found that there was some sort of Amish community there, but we were having difficulty really verifying everything. They wanted to have images to go along with this, and we had a lovely discussion about this where I said, I don't think they're going to allow photographs to go on. And the editor had proposed sending an artist along with me who would do drawings and paintings of everything involved. So there would be something on stage, and it would be compelling because it would be a beautiful set of paintings while I slowly unfolded this story. Now, I wasn't used to a lot of this. I like to think that I'm accurate and I have a dedication to truth. But sometimes I have to use my recollection, or I'm hesitant to bother somebody and say, did you really tell me this confession 10 years ago while I tell people a bolderized or modified story about it? Like, I don't like doing that. Obviously, this was being treated as if it was a real magazine, a real newspaper, a real news story being reported. And they were walking me through every phrase, every declaration, and every bit of information. And the fact is, it couldn't happen. It was impossible to verify all of these names. It was impossible to get Majere's actual position, to talk to the community, to go to the buildings, to back up what I was telling them. The way we parted ways, to me, always stuck wrong, as far as I'm concerned. It almost felt like I had been found out, like I had claimed a big fish story and I had no fish to back it up, that I was telling tales. Now, I know that wasn't the case, and I'll tell you now, that was a real story that really happened, and I've changed nothing about it. If somebody was pulling a prank on me, if they were pretending to be Amish and telling a completely fabricated story about this person and why they were sending me shareware CDs, Well, this was a breathtaking amount of information and a breathtaking amount of fabrication for no benefit. I mean, I wasn't discussing this out loud, and I wasn't going to not take the shareware CDs, so this would have been an elaborate prank to beat all the pranks that have been in my life. I can't think of somebody working this hard for such little benefit if it was made up. But it just didn't make the cut. And I got the impression, that may or may not be accurate, that Pop-Up Magazine didn't need my services again with a different story. And that's a shame, because I had a second story talking about forgery of old computer software being sold. The fact that there is and continues to be a problem where people are fabricating, literally making in workshops, fake old microcomputer software and selling it on eBay, playing all the game of grifting and telling people that a piece of software they're selling is the original one made by the original author, of which there are no copies known to exist except for this one, and then trying to sell them to someone credulous for $1,000 or $2,000. I think there's something there, but I just got the impression this wasn't something they were going to pursue. I don't feel bad, per se, but I have turned it around, making sure that I never rest on my laurels in the work that I do. I have not hit the peak of giving a speech. I've not hit the peak of researching a story, of looking up the truth behind what I believe to be. I've not come close to my potential as a person telling stories and myths and lore to folks, to you. I have a long way to go. I want to reach that, but it's not something I'm at yet. When that's going to happen, if that's going to happen, well, that's perhaps a tale I'm going to have to tell another time. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bakoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Emilio Oliveira, Forrest Fuqua, Scott Roseanne, Scott McGrady, and Wayne Arthurton, along with the hundreds of other people on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Pop-Up Magazine continues to thrive. They were only doing a few shows a year at most. I think it was as little as 4 or 3. They have moved to a podcast temporarily, but it's really inspiring to know that people are constantly trying to change up the presentation and conference gig in such a way that it's not all the same homogenized, medium quality, warmed over stories being told primarily, to sell a product. If I was to ever be a part of conference organizing in my future, this is what I would shoot for. A number of small, well-curated, well-made speeches that leave the audience literally breathless and inspired. Pop-Up Magazine is that. And again, while there's not really much recording out there for you to listen to, maybe the dream of what this is and what it could be is just as enjoyable.